You're listening to the RBN Energy Blogcast. This is an audio version of RBN's Daily Energy Blog, which is a fun and insightful daily commentary on oil, gas, NGL, and refined product markets. Each morning, we cover commodity fundamentals and industry changes to keep you informed of developing trends across the U.S. energy landscape.
Tuesday, June 30th, 2026. Come on and ride it. Common carrier rules shape liquids pipelines, but open seasons remain crucial. Published by Rick Smead and Lisa Scheidler. The pipeline open season is one of the most important aspects of the midstream world, regardless of whether the pipeline in question is moving natural gas or a liquid. But liquids pipelines operate quite differently from their gas pipeline cousins. They are regulated under a different law and face broader competition, giving them more flexibility in some respects but less in others. As a result, people who know gas pipelines well are often hopelessly confused when they first start dealing with liquids pipelines. In today's RBN blog, we'll walk through how open seasons work for liquids pipelines and the role they play. This is our third blog on open seasons. As a refresher, an open season is a competitive process in which any qualified shipper can bid for firm pipeline capacity. In Part 1, we explained the practice of conducting open seasons for capacity and energy pipelines and gave a high-level explanation of the differences between natural gas pipelines and liquids pipelines, even though they're both regulated by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC. In Part 2, we did a deep dive into interstate natural gas transmission and storage facilities, including how they connect to precedent agreements and certificate proceedings. Today, we're focused solely on liquids pipelines. When we use that description, we're talking about liquid hydrocarbons, crude oil, refined products and NGLs, not water, beer, or anything else. Unlike natural gas pipelines that are regulated under the Natural Gas Act, NGA, liquids pipelines are regulated under the Interstate Commerce Act, ICA, a much older statute that applies broadly to commercial transportation between states, including trains and trucks. The ICA has different standards from the NGA, so the regulations that have flowed from the law differ. There are a handful of really big differences between the two regulatory schemes. FERC regulates everything about a natural gas pipeline, but does not regulate the actual construction and operation of liquids pipelines. It only regulates their terms of service for interstate shippers. Natural gas pipelines are contract carriers, meaning they only have to ship for parties with a contract, whereas liquids pipelines are common carriers that generally ship for anyone who walks in the door, and if there's not enough room, they allocate or prorate their capacity over all the shippers, leaving them all with less than they requested. Natural gas pipeline tariff rates are really detailed and take major rate cases to set, while liquids pipelines have some different options, mostly being allowed to track inflation, which greatly streamlines the process of rate approval. Natural gas pipelines have rate flexibility. They can discount rates to meet the market without filing a new tariff, while liquids pipelines must seek a new tariff even for discounted rates. More on those differences below. Both types of pipeline can apply for market-based rates, with liquids pipelines much more likely to gain approval because of the higher level of competition compared with gas. In the gas arena, there are approved market-based rates for storage, but no gas pipeline has received such approvals. Overall, gas pipelines can generally respond directly to day-to-day market conditions, whereas liquids pipelines may turn to an intermediary, often their marketing affiliate, to interface with the market. The differences in the level of detail and the setting of tariff rates are not accidental. Natural gas pipelines are often the only practical way to move gas from producing regions to consuming markets, so regulation evolved to treat them as natural monopolies, with detailed oversight of rates, services, and project development. Liquids, by contrast, also can move by truck, rail, barge, or other modes, giving shippers alternatives and allowing policymakers to rely more on competition and market forces. Congress locked in this distinction in the Energy Policy Act of 1992 by directing FERC to streamline rate-making for liquids pipelines. The result was indexing, now the dominant method under which a liquids pipeline's rates are set. Under indexing, once the original rate is established, usually based upon the pipeline's costs, it can be adjusted annually using a FERC-approved inflation factor, so liquids pipelines have a much easier process for adjusting their tariff rates. See, you really got me. Natural gas pipelines cannot change their tariff rates without a full rate case or specifically approved adjustment mechanism. In addition, as noted, unlike gas pipelines, a liquids pipeline can obtain FERC authority to charge market-based rates if it can demonstrate that it lacks market power in origin and destination markets. But the advantage enjoyed by liquids pipelines in setting their rates is offset by the fact that they may be stuck with those rates when dealing with the market day-to-day, whereas gas pipelines can deviate from their tariff rates based on market demand. Committed capacity. Which brings us to open seasons, like the one advertised in Figure 1 of the blog. Unlike gas pipelines, potential shippers on liquids pipelines can walk in off the street, seek to sign a ticket, and ship. Since rates cannot vary from the tariff, there is no bidding. As common carriers, like a city bus or a train, if too many shippers show up for the available capacity, space on the pipe gets cut in a process called proration. And because FERC has no jurisdiction over liquids pipeline facilities, only their terms of service, there is no built-in process up front to test market demand for a new pipeline. Unlike a gas pipeline, FERC doesn't have the legal authority to determine whether a liquids pipeline is needed or not. However, as investment picked up in the liquids pipeline industry, particularly in response to the shale revolution, liquids pipelines needed something a little more predictable in terms of shipper revenue, and shippers needed more certainty of capacity. So the use of committed capacity deals evolved, whereby shippers sign up for longer periods and are protected from proration by agreeing to pay for their dedicated capacity whether they use it or not. These contracts act just like firm transportation contracts on gas pipelines, with their fixed monthly reservation rates. There was initial resistance at FERC to the notion of shippers being able to take chunks of capacity out of the general, prorated market. For liquids pipelines that are prorated, the last 12 months of shipper history factor into the allocation. But as we said, the need for predictability in getting liquids pipelines built eventually led to acceptance, most recently expressed in FERC's 2020 proposed statement of policy in PL21-1. It acknowledged that individual decisions had accepted committed shipper contracts that let shippers reserve capacity through long-term commitment since the 1990s, but made clear that those commitments had to be awarded through an open season. Although PL21-1 was ultimately withdrawn for other reasons, it was a clear statement of commission policy. Commission policy is a step below hard rules. It is guidance rather than a binding rule, explaining how FERC is likely to act when a specific case is before it. Still, when the regulator signals how it is likely to view these arrangements, companies usually pay attention. And the FERC staff certainly regards the open season as a given. The relevance of committed shipper contracts and open seasons to facility growth is practical. Even though liquids pipelines do not go through the same certificate process as natural gas pipelines, they still need FERC approval for interstate rates and services. When interstate liquids pipeline rates are submitted to the FERC, the reaction of the commission staff is very important to the timing and processing of the rates. When committed service is involved, no matter whether the rules are rules or just a statement of policy, open seasons make the staff happy, and a happy staff is a lot better for the company than the alternative. The use of committed capacity is a little more complicated than it first appears. Keep in mind, liquids pipelines must reserve 10% of their capacity for walk-up shippers. As noted, part of the rationale for needing capacity commitments is revenue stability for the pipeline. A pipeline investing a big chunk of money in a project likes to know that a portion of its capacity is backed by long-term commitments. But that is only part of the story. Committed capacity also helps provide a mechanism to separate highly dynamic oil markets from the relatively rigid pricing framework imposed by the ICA. As noted, pipeline tariff rates are not especially flexible day-to-day. In liquids pipelines, there are market-attractive options, such as market-based rates or shipper settlements, but these usually require longer approval periods than are available to gas pipelines. That is, liquids pipelines can enter settlements with their shippers to set rates, which is similar to how most gas pipeline rate cases are settled. Ordinarily, the rates remain static as established, although they have been dialed into the market's general requirements. However, getting a static rate to move around to keep pace with market conditions is often cumbersome. In other words, the market can move much faster than the regulatory process. Buy-sell arrangements. A mechanism that can bridge the gap between fixed tariff rates and a moving market is to use a marketing affiliate of the pipeline operator or other committed shipper as the market interface. For example, the affiliate might pay 50 cents/barrels for committed transportation rights, and then, through buy-sell arrangements, effectively charge third-party shippers 45 cents, 55 cents, or whatever the market will bear at a given time, typically reflected in the spot price differential between the pipeline's inlet and outlet. The regulated transportation service remains subject to the tariff, but the commercial market built around those rights can respond much more quickly to changing supply, demand, and trading conditions, meaning daily and intraday. When the committed shipper is the entity interacting with the market, it often dominates the open season. A buy-sell agreement is a structure in which a shipper purchases product at one point on a pipeline and resells it to the same party at a higher price at another point, with the price difference effectively covering transportation. This approach is common and permitted on liquids pipelines, including by affiliates, but is illegal on interstate natural gas pipelines. Gas pipelines don't need buy-sells because A. they can meet the market directly through discounting and negotiated rates, and B, shippers can resell capacity via capacity release rather than embedding it in a buy sell, something FERC doesn't allow for gas pipes because it views it as disguising transportation charges. Aside from the market interface value, for shippers who can afford it, the benefit of committed capacity is straightforward. Those who sign long-term commitments during an open season secure access to transportation capacity. Shippers moving barrels under the regular tariff may be subject to proration when a pipeline becomes oversubscribed, while committed shippers generally retain the transportation rights they obtained through the open season process. That certainty is often valuable enough to justify making a major commitment in the first place. Most liquids open seasons include several familiar elements: a public, transparent call for capacity commitments, standardized commercial terms available to all shippers, a defined bid window, typically 30 to 90 days, and the eventual signing of precedent agreements with those who step up. In those agreements, shippers make binding commitments to reserve transportation capacity, usually contingent on the project being built or expanded, and the parties spell out volumes, contract length, rates, receipt and delivery points, and other conditions for the project to proceed. It is not at all uncommon for liquids pipelines to move forward with construction and finalize rates and services closer to the in-service date rather than having every commercial term locked down up front. This is quite different from gas pipelines, which have to show up at FERC with enough firm shipper commitments to even start the certificate process. But although liquids pipelines do not need a certificate from FERC before construction can begin, developers often seek advanced assurance that proposed rates and services will comply with applicable law. One way to get that assurance is through a petition for declaratory order, or PDO, in essence, an early good housekeeping seal, before the actual tariff is ever filed. Because FERC has no deadline to act on a PDO, projects can remain in limbo while developers and shippers wait for regulatory certainty. Open seasons remain the primary tool for demonstrating demand and reducing regulatory risk. Even in the comparatively flexible liquids world, when regulators expect an open season, developers ignore that expectation at their peril. Come On and Ride It, The Train, was written by Barry White, CC Lemonhead, Jay Ski and Michael Phillips and appears as the first song on the album Get On Up and Dance by Quad City DJs. Come On and Ride It, The Train, is a 7-minute, 30-second dance music tour de force that is based on Barry White's theme from Together Brothers from the 1974 film Together Brothers. The song has been played at several major sporting events. Released as a single in February 1996, it went to number 3 on the Billboard Hot 100 Singles chart and has been certified platinum by the Recording Industry Association of America, RIAA. Personnel on the record were Jay Ski McGowan, CC Lemonhead, production, programming, sampling, and J. Lana LaFleur, vocals. Get On Up and Dance is the only studio album released by the hip-hop group Quad City DJs. The album was recorded in 1995-96 at D Junkyard Studio in Jacksonville, Florida, and produced by Jay Ski and CC Lemonhead. Released in June 1996, it went to number 31 on the Billboard 200 Albums chart and has been certified platinum by the RIAA. One single was released from the LP. Quad City DJs are an American hip-hop group started by Jay Ski and CC Lemonhead, who worked together previously with Chill Deal, 95 South, and 69 Boys. Singer J. Lana LaFleur was added to the group to provide vocals. They have released one studio album and 4 singles. The group also wrote and performed the theme song for the 1996 basketball film Space Jam. In 2015, they released the single 4-Minute Twerkout, and in 2017 they released the single What Happens Here Stays Here. In 2021, CC Lemonhead put together a touring group called Quad City DJs.
Thanks for listening to the RBN Daily Energy Blogcast. For more information on energy market reports, maps, and consulting engagements, please visit us at rbnenergy.com. And thanks for rocking with us.